You're listening to the Strongpreneur Nation podcast with your host, Tom Reber.
Hey, welcome to the Strongpreneur podcast. I'm super excited to be talking to my guest today. His name is Mr. Brad Barton. How you doing, Brad?
Hey there, Tom.
Brad is a total stud. You've done some pretty cool things in your life. Currently, you are a motivational speaker. You're an author. But you've also been known to do some things that are kind of hard in your life, in the athletic realm. And, so I'm super excited to have you on here because, you know, Brad's a world record holder. He's, you know, been a U.S. Olympic, qualifier, a five-time All-America, distance runner, right?
Anything worth doing is worth overdoing, right?
Anything worth doing is worth overdoing. I love that. So Brad, why don't you, tell us a little bit about you, a little bit of your, quick bio on you, and then we'll kind of dig in, man.
Raised on a cattle ranch near Salmon, Idaho, and came down to Weber State in Ogden, Utah on a running scholarship. A couple of years off for a religious commitment. Served a Mormon mission in Northern California, came back to Weber State, fired up, grown up, and had an incredible coach, really hard man named Chick Hislop, a man named Chick. And he, the guy is a superstar. He's a USA Track and Field Hall of Fame coach. Was the 1996 U.S. Head Olympic distance coach. The guy He's truly a just phenomenal kind of a celebrity coach at this little tiny university, and the guy couldn't attract really great recruits, so he got the kids he could get and made them great, and made us great, and we decided at one point that, or he did anyway, that I could make the Olympic team in 1992, and he said, let's go do something that's never been done at Weber State. And so we worked hard to get that done, and we were in position to win, and I didn't make the team. It was a challenge in the semifinal round, and I slipped is what happened. And so for many years, I was working and raising a family, married a girl on the team, one of my teammates, and she was an Olympic trials qualifier in the marathon as well. So we got together and had some hybrids, Tom.
There you go, man. So
we got six kids, and all of them are dang fast. And anyway, just a terrific experience, but all the time I was kind of thinking about this track and field thing, and it wasn't something that I chose. It kind of chose me, decided after many years of working to build a speaking career, one of my messages was do more, get back on the learning curve. Mm-hmm. Let's do hard things. Let's be amazing. And in the back of my mind, I guess I started drinking my own Kool-Aid. So I stepped back on the track, and after failure and many, 4 years of failure, Coach and I decided we were going to set some world records. So the fastest old guy on the planet. How's that?
I love it. So that how long was that record standing?
We had four records that we were going for, and okay. We got three of the four. One of them was a 37-year-old American record in the 3,000-meter steeplechase, my old event. And then the world record was a 30-year-old world record. It was set in 1984. Hmm. So we did not only broke it, but we smashed it. So
yeah. So officially, you were the oldest. Guy to go under what in the mile 420.
So that was our failure. Yeah. Okay. We got the indoor mile world record, and maybe we can get into some of the details there, but mm-hmm. indoor mile world record, the indoor 3000 meter world record, and the 3000 meter steeplechase world record in the 45 to 49 masters track and field age group. And then the fourth record was the outdoor mile record. And I made some tactical errors early in the race and missed it by just about a second, but was the oldest sub 420 mile, or in other words, the oldest man, oldest human to go under 420 in the mile. Hmm. But it was a failure that day because I missed the world record.
Well, what was your indoor one then?
416.
Okay. So four minutes, 16 seconds, 1 mile.
8.83.
I could do that on a bike.
Most people, those are just numbers, but if you stop and consider that it was deep into this century that, this last century that human beings ever went under 4 minutes in the mile, and if you can imagine a 47-year-old, you know, running 4:16, I mean, that's it's you know, it only been done once. So
Well, that's cool. So, you know, I met you about a year ago now. At an event we were at, and down in Cabo, and we hit it off. We've stayed in touch, seen each other a few times since, and I thought you'd be a perfect guest here, because each time I've heard you speak, you are always getting in front of a group talking about, let's do something hard. You know, let's you know, things that resonate with me are, you know, let's go do something that's never been done before. And the people that listen to this podcast are, they're entrepreneurs that are trying to build something, or trying to do something cool. And so you've certainly done that, you know, as an athlete and in business and things like that. And so that's just, to be perfectly blunt, that's why I wanted you on here, because I've heard your story a few times. I love it. And I really just wanted to kind of dig in and just have you share some of those ups and downs, and what, where you, how you got to where you got, and the development and the, some of the knocks along the way, and what your frame of mind was as you kept going. So,
So Tom, it's important for me when I'm speaking to a group, no matter what the venue is, I'm telling you my stories, but these are not just my stories. 'Cause if anyone has ever been discouraged, if they've ever made a bad decision when it really counted, if they've ever found themselves in the wrong lane, you know, just spinning, if they've ever fallen hard to the inside rail, if they've ever had voices telling them they can't get this done, or reminding them how things are and how things are probably always going to be, and if you've had voices telling you in your own head or to other people that speak in the language of possibility, then these are our stories. The stories I'm telling really aren't, I mean, the details are mine, but this is a human condition. This is entrepreneurs. And when we can tie into those things, we get stronger in life, stronger in business. That's thought leadership.
Yeah, and I love that, because, you know, like I said, every time I'm in the room and you're speaking, somebody's crying because it's touching it's touching them. And each time I hear you, I walk away with something a little bit different. So tell us a little bit about how you got into the running thing, because I know, you know, you growing up and your upbringing and a relationship with your coach and some things like that. I think it was a pretty cool story.
Yeah. And so speed me up a little bit if you need to, but I was, it's actually a little more complicated. I was raised on a dairy farm in West Layton, Utah.
All right. That's enough. We're good.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead, man.
So my dad is a pretty hard dude, and 9 kids for cheap child labor. You know, I grew up working hard, when I was 13, dad moved us up to the ranch in Salmon. So a cattle ranch. I just didn't like the work very much. I liked working, but I didn't like that work, you know, cold hands or you know, in the summertime, just blazing hot. He just would say, you're going to have to go. This is what you're going to have to do if you don't get your college education. And I wasn't a very good student. I have some learning disabilities. Lexia, I think they call it.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
some of your folks will understand that. But anyway, I realized the only way we're going to get this done financially is if I get a scholarship. So I just ran hard. I wrestled hard and then ended up doing well enough to get a scholarship to Weber State. I had an incredible coach in high school that would just, he just said, well, one of the things he told me, he says, Brad, if you want to change your story, and I did, I badly did, Tom, I wanted to change. And once again, this isn't just about me. Put this out to your listeners. Are there some parts of your story that you'd like to change? Are there some things about your marriage, about your relationship with your teenagers, the bottom line in your business? If you want to change your story, he said, you got to change your stories. And that was huge for me. I got what he meant right off. This notion of mental conditioning. I use magic sometimes when I'm speaking, and magicians use mental conditioning. We use the words that magicians speak in their patter heavily influence the perception of the audience. That's how you get the job done. That's how I can fool my audience. Mm-hmm. If I'm using the language of deception, my audience will be deceived. And if I'm using the other kind of language, then they're not going to be. So that has some application for life. If you want to change your story, you got to change your stories. Mm-hmm. And so I started to change out some of the things I was saying to myself. I had a lot of, you know, negative self-talk. I love a term that you brought to me in my life last January in Cabo. You call it head trash, Tom, mm-hmm. and I love that. I'm sure your listeners, viewers, you use that with them, and I just never heard that term before. But I certainly had a lot of head trash, still do. And you and I were on a conversation just personally a few days ago, and we were working some of my current head trash, right, Tom?
Yeah, that's right.
But I got out of high school and on to college with lots fewer chunks of head trash. Because my coach, and I'm looking at your Strongpreneur pledge, number 3, I will be hungry for mentoring. And maybe I'm getting the cart before the horse here,
that's
but
all right, man.
This notion that I can't see everything, I will invite Strongpreneurs into my life and accountability, encouragement. This man, George Artemis, he was my first real strong mentor. Hmm. And I was somebody that was just eager to know what he knew. So he gave me some books to read, some realized that I was a terrible reader, so he gave me some tapes. I don't know if you folks remember 8-tracks. Probably you don't. You're too young.
Oh, I remember. I had my first 8-track was Foghat Live. So there you go.
There you go. All right.
And I had Steppenwolf too. So
nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you can imagine, Zig Ziglar had some 8-tracks, and so I'm listening to these things, and I'm thinking, dang, what. What I mean, he in terms of head trash, may I share a Zig Ziglar story, a quick one?
Yeah, go for it.
He says, in a large southern city, there is a beautiful shopping center. But 25 years ago, it was a city dump. For over 100 years, the citizens of that town have been taking their garbage out and dumping it on the old garbage dump. Then a few years ago, the city founders or city fathers saw that the city was starting to grow in that direction, so they stopped dumping the garbage. They encouraged the builders, local builders, take the dirt they were excavating and dump it on top of the garbage dump. They hauled tens of thousands of loads of dirt out there. And then a few years later, the builders looked at the site and said, the foundation is ready. Let's build ourselves a shopping center. And Tom, that's exactly what they did. Hmm. Now, as I'm listening to the Zig Ziglar tape, and he's doing the, you know, Zig, some of you don't know who Zig, but if you do, this beautiful Texan accent, he says, well, what is that shopping center built on? He says, why? It's built on garbage, isn't it?
Yep.
And then he says, I tell you this story simply because over a number of years, there might have been a lot of people dumping a whole lot of negative ceiling garbage and telling you can't do something because you're not brave enough, you're not strong enough, you just plain can't do it. Mm-hmm. And then he says, but that is pure garbage. And when I listened to that, I got to tell you, it spoke to my heart, and I thought there's been a whole lot of negative garbage in my head, my dad put in there, that I put in there. And when I started letting go of some of that garbage, I started realizing that I can do more. I can lean into the pain. I can lean into the hard, and that the hard way is often the easy way, right? So mm-hmm. we're going to accept a lot of pain in our lives. All of us are going to go through pain. And I love the book, The Road Less Traveled, M. Scott Peck. He says billions. Check it out. I don't know how you're consuming this, listener, but if you're at your computer or you're driving or maybe you got it on a podcast and you're out for a run, whatever. Listen to this quotation. It is golden. M. Scott Peck says that billions daily, and there's, 7 billion of us on the planet, that's basically everybody, billions daily attempt to avoid the pain of responsibility. We're not going to avoid it. We're just going to attempt to avoid it, right? Mm-hmm. By escaping from freedom. Now that's pretty deep and I think incredibly profound. We are not going to escape the pain of responsibility. We're either going to run from it and be captive by it, yeah. and then the pain is going to trickle into our lives in small and large ways, or we're going to face the pain, the responsibility head on, and then get through it, experience it, and then be free. Mm. That's being a strongpreneur.
I love it, man. Gosh, you know, just, okay, that's a wrap. Great episode. So, man, you brought up the head trash thing, and that phrase I got from my first business coach years ago, and I don't know where he got it, but, you know, I ripped it off because I loved it. And
I did too.
That's all good. I actually heard there was a quote years ago, what is it? Good composers borrow and great ones steal. So nice. There you go. The first time I heard you, I'm looking at my notes that I took on my iPhone when I heard you speak the first time. I actually took notes and I jotted down a few things. And one of the
I thought you were texting. Back yeah.
one of the things I wrote down was, and I didn't write anything else around it. I just wrote this down, and so I'm going to ask you to kind of elaborate on this. I wrote reset my defaults. Mm. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the computer world has kind of copted the word defaults, and they, you know, call them computer defaults, right? Mm-hmm. And if you imagine, computer defaults aren't good. They're not bad. They're just really powerful. And the reason I say they're not good or bad, well, I guess they're both in a way. If you get a computer default incorrect, it can be a very frustrating experience. Any of us that have ever had a computer that somehow the default got reset, we don't know how to unset it or reset it, whatever. It's just very frustrating. But imagine if you had to reconfigure a computer every time you turn the thing on. They wouldn't even be useful, would they?
Right.
So defaults could be really great, and they can be really terrible. And the human brain is, well, the great Bob Mowad said the human brain is the fastest working, coolest running, most compact and efficient computer mechanism ever produced in large quantities by unskilled labor. So we've got this marvelous piece of equipment up here, this the most amazing computer of all, and we've got defaults too, and they were created, they were literally programmed, you know, at 3 a.m. when I'm not willing to get out of bed to go milk the 350 cows with my mama, and my dad's down there and he puts his boot in my rear and tells me I'm a lazy bugger, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm 8 years old. There's some defaults that are created right there. That's a very specific, very powerful programming. Well, that's going to take some reprogramming. You know, you're lazy, you're lazy, you're lazy. You're the laziest one. That I had to get rid of that. And this notion that I was lazy, I maybe took that and wore that as a badge for some years.
Yeah.
And now it's easy to talk about because I'm not. I know I'm not.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm just the opposite. But that's one example. You know, a lot of the defaults that are in our lives were created in our youth, and some of those defaults are not serving us very well anymore. Some of them never did.
Yeah.
Right.
So one of yours was you're lazy, and obviously you're not. Are there any other defaults that you look back on that you had that you've made shifts in?
Yeah. This notion that the two big ones were you're lazy and you're stupid. Mm-hmm. In elementary school, when I was put in the resource classes and told that I had learning disabilities and that I wasn't smart, you know, it made it easy not to try. And that goes with just about any endeavor. I'm just not good at that. Yeah. I'm not good at remembering names, right?
Yeah.
Baloney.
Right.
Baloney. That's one that I had believed half my life. I'm not good at remembering names. No, that's not the truth. The truth is I wasn't very good at learning names, right? Mm. You want to make more money? Learn to learn people's names. You are going to make more money if you learn to learn people's names and remember them. So I didn't have a problem remembering names. I just had a problem, a laziness and an unawareness that I was smart at learning names. Mm-hmm. And then when I realized that, I took the time to learn people's names, and I can do pretty well with names, as good or better than. In fact, I have people all the time tell me, "Wow, you're so good at names. I could never do that." Mm. Well, that's head trash right there.
Yeah. So you brought up the lazy and stupid thing. Did you know that I rode the yellow bus for 2 years? The little short yellow bus. I was a short bus kid. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
Yeah. So and one of my
special, is that a special bus?
Yeah, that was a special kid. And hey. And I rode it for 2 years in grade school, and that really jacked with me, man. It set a tone where my whole life up until, I mean, I'm 46 now, and it was probably, you know, by the time I was early to mid 30s, I thought until my early to mid 30s, I honestly believed that I wasn't smart.
Wow.
And I had that baggage, and it was actually, there are a few milestones in my life where I realized that I had what it takes, if that makes sense. Like I was put in a position where I had to share my thoughts on something or my mindset or give some advice. And in kind of some, one of the most recent ones was actually in a group of, with 12 real powerful business dudes. I was sitting at a table with these guys, and somebody asked me my opinion on something. And how I ended up at the table is a long story, but these were some pretty cool dudes, and I'm like, what am I doing here type thing. And they asked me a question. It was something to do with marketing. And I shared my opinion, and the leader of the gang, mega successful guy, looks at me as I'm talking. I talked for maybe 45 seconds. I shared my opinion. He nods his head. He looks at his assistant and says, "Are we able to implement that?" And the kid goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "All right, that's a good idea." And then we moved on. Well, that 45 second window of my life wiped clean any residual "I'm stupid" feelings or thoughts that I had. It was just that little thing. So I totally get where you're coming from, where you have this default that just follows you around and haunts you. And, you know, and I was a terrible student because for a lot of reasons, but I think one of the reasons was I just didn't believe that I had what it took to be a good student. So why bother?
Yeah.
You know, so, and what I've learned about myself since, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, just keep your thought, because that's really one of the hearts of what I'd like to have your listeners reminded of or understand, that the notion of that I'm not whatever, mm-hmm. or I'm too much of whatever, creates the excuse to not try, to not be strong. And so I'm not smart, so whatever, I'm not going to try. What you just said, I think, mm-hmm. is gold. And when we get rid of the default, we give ourselves permission to be stronger, permission mm-hmm. to work harder, permission to work smarter, and to get out of living in scarcity and live in abundance.
Yeah. Well, that actually, what you just said, just kind of moves me to the next thing I wrote down when I heard you speak here that I was going to bring up. So I'll just bring it up now. I had written down, you had said, open to the possibility is a nice place to be. Do you remember that?
I do.
Tell us about that. Cause it resonated with me enough to where I just wrote it down, and I'd love you to kind of bring that to those listening right now.
Yeah. So I was using, as I recall, I was using an illusion. I was tearing up a newspaper, and then I don't know what your experience of that was, but I used that torn and restored newspaper, very specifically to let everybody know that it's possible to be deceived. Every single one of us can be deceived. And so is it possible to actually tear the newspaper up and put it back together? Maybe. Mm-hmm. But what I found after years of looking at it, literally 3 years of trying to figure out a way to actually do it, I decided, you know, I have to revert to trickery, right? And mm-hmm. so I did, and now I've got this pretty killer illusion that I use.
Yeah, it is.
But then – living in the with a language of possibility rather than living in it with a language of staticness, right? My dad would many times tell me how things are, how things have been, how things probably always going to be. And my coaches were continually speaking the language of possibilities and being open to the possibility. What if? I mean, three guys are going to make the Olympic team in the 3,000-meter steeplechase. Someone is going to break a world record in the Masters 45 to 49 age group. Mm-hmm. Someone's going to increase market share in your market next year.
Yeah,
it's going to happen. Someone's market share is going to be depleted. They're actually going to lose ground in the market share. It's flat out. It's going to happen. Life is not static. It's dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. So the question becomes, why not you? Are you open to the possibility that staying where you're at, you're going to slide backwards?
Yeah.
In moving forward, retreating is not an option. Not today. Not now. Retreat is not an option. We've got to be open to the possibility that we are enough, open to the possibility that the value that I bring to the world is going to be enough. And so I guess that's what open to the possibility is for me, is just living in a state of creativity rather than a state of you know, damnation, I guess, is a way. You know, you're either moving forward or you're damning yourself. In what you're kind of a word that is, you know, more religious, but it works just fine secularly as well. We are stopped up and damned, or we're free flowing and we're moving towards the big pond, right?
And that's a nice place to be. So you talk a lot about fear being an illusion. What do you tell that small or that entrepreneur right now who might be afraid to implement some changes that he knows are right, but he's afraid of what might happen and, you know, that sort of thing. We've all been in that situation in our career where we know what we should do, but things are a little uncertain and fear is getting the best of us. What do you say to that person?
Yeah, I'm actually in a spot right now, as you know, where I'm dealing with that right now in of my life. I'm rebranding myself, and there's some fear involved in that. I'm going to be putting out a fair chunk of investment to do this, and if I misstep, you know, it could have some negative consequences. And you want to be, you know, carefully considered, but what you do. But one of my other good friends, Tom, is. His name is Kent Whipple, and he's one of your folks. He's not a strongpreneur, but he is strong, and he's an entrepreneur, right?
He qualifies. There you go.
Exactly. He owns the largest plumbing, heating, and air conditioning business in this market, in Utah market. You know, has a multi-million-dollar business, and just is a wonderful man. And I called him once. He's one of my brain trust, and I called him about a business decision I was going to make. I was going to buy a piece of equipment for my business. And I was counseling with him and says, what about this? And what about that? And if I do this, then, you know, this could happen. And he said something that I just loved. He says, Brad, I have a bias for action.
Hmm.
And I love that notion. And it helps me when I'm living in fear to remember that conversation with Kent Whipple. To have a bias for action, because I'm a bit of a hand wringer, but he taught me that a good plan, well executed, is much better than a perfect plan that you just keep looking at.
Right. Absolutely.
So that just moving forward helps me with the fear, and getting it back to the track and field idea. Many times, in fact, this afternoon I'm going to be standing on a starting line on a track. It's cold here in Utah. But I'm going to go do a hard outdoor interval workout, and there's some fear involved in that because it's going to be very painful. I'm going to do 4,800 meters of fair torture, especially to an almost 50-year-old guy. And I tell you what, the fear is present, and it actually helps center me. It's not a bad thing. I've earned the right to be that afraid. because I know that I'm fit enough to hurt really bad. A guy that's not fit can't hurt as bad as what I can hurt, because I can get right to the edge of you know, misery and stay that way a long time in an interval workout because I'm fit enough to do that. There, and here's the thing: once I step on the starting line and that first interval starts, everything else is timed from there. The rest is timed. I'm not afraid from there. From there on, there's no fear. It's just suffering, which is way different, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid up until the gun goes off, and then wow. So I guess having a bias for action, doing yourself into feeling better, rather than just waiting around to feel yourself into doing better. try that one on, right? Yeah. Moving forward is the best antidote for fear.
That's good stuff. Run toward the chaos, right?
You bet. You bet. Yeah.
So a lot of people listening, you know, obviously are entrepreneurs, business owners, they're frequently put in positions where they have to get in front of a group of people, 3 people, 10 people, 100 people, and they need to communicate their stuff, whatever that stuff might be. You are somebody who speaks in front of groups of people all year long for several years. You connect in ways that I think are amazing. And just a side note, if you're listening to this and you have been considering bringing in a speaker to move your people forward, you need to call Brad and hire him. Like, pay the money and hire him, because I guarantee you your people will be better off for it. Your organization will be better off for it. All right, so there's my commercial for you. So, and we'll put links to all your stuff in the show notes so that they can reach out to you and find you. But what advice would you give the entrepreneur who might be, you know, a little bit nervous talking in front of a group of people and they have to, you know, connect? And does anything come to mind just that, that's low hanging fruit that we can implement?
I'm not sure how this works. There's as many different applications to this. And so figure out how this works for you. But teaching with activities, teaching with object lessons, teaching with some kind of visual is much more effective. For instance, there's back to the contractor's world. There's a large contracting organization, a builder, that has, you know, I don't know, probably 1,000 employees here in Utah, and I was helping to train some of their upper level managers that are making presentations. Mm-hmm. And we had these guys just throw off the boring whatever and just be open to the possibility. So great story. I just heard that happened from that. This guy's he's the cement fella, right? The guy that does cement in the company, the main guy. And he's talking about the need to keep the cement the right temperature, you know, when it freezes at night and so forth. So he had the sea level guys stand up and say, "You're a blanket and you're a blanket." And he had them lying down on the ground, and this is the guy that when he gets up to speak at one of their staff meetings, everyone starts to text or they go to sleep. Mm. And now they're laughing and he's using these guys as a blanket, trying to teach this technical thing, and people are howling, and they remember the lesson that he was teaching about the need to whatever, and the CEO got up and says, "Man, you're the best presenter we got," and that's from the worst, just because he was willing to just break it up a little bit and do something a little bit different.
Yeah, I go to a number of business networking groups and, you know, events and things like this. And I myself, you know, fall into this from time to time. And that's going to those types of things unprepared. Like, I just don't give it a lot of thought. And then I go, "Oh, crap, I'm on in 5 minutes," you know. And so I think taking some time to really think about what you want to communicate and getting outside that box a little bit before you get into that situation.
But don't, the more technical the material, I think the more need there is to liven it up with you know, some story or some illustration or maybe some object lesson, up to and including grabbing the boss and laying him on the floor and saying, you're a blanket. And you know, do something a little off. People will remember it, and you'll be able to communicate better, and you're going to be more confident in your next try as well.
So if I were to ask you what one of the most embarrassing moments you've ever had speaking was, what comes to mind?
Oh, gee. I've got just terrible horror story. Okay, so I'm speaking to a group of elementary school students. This is an enormous elementary. It's 900 kids, K-6. And I'm standing on a chair on a stage. It's a three-foot stage, but I'm not high enough because it's such a big room. Mm-hmm. Kids in the back can't see. I'm doing magic. And I'm standing on a chair, and the chair is inching its way closer and closer to the edge. And it finally, one of the legs found the edge. And so I did a Peter Pan right off the top of that thing, landed on top of the chair 3 feet later, and broke my wrist and separated my shoulder. That was pretty embarrassing.
And the whole place was laughing, weren't they?
No.
Come on, grade school kids, and they weren't cracking up. They thought that was the best thing ever, right?
It was a horrific fall, and there was just this collective gasp. It was like seeing this, you know, this wreck. It was awful. And I jumped up with a smile, finished my last 20 minutes of my presentation. I didn't do any magic because I only had one hand now. My arm's lame, hanging on the side. And I just walked up to the principal after it was all over with. And I said, ouch. my hand in a cast. Anyway, that was pretty embarrassing, dude.
Oh, man, that's – yeah, my next question was, did you finish? So, obviously –
I finished.
So, I remember doing a – years ago when I owned a painting company outside of Chicago, I was doing an estimate, and I went into this guy's master bathroom. It was a huge master bathroom. They had a sunken tub, so I had to, like, step into the tub to walk over to this windowsill that was rotting to look at it, you know, and I'm poking at the windowsill, and as I turn around to walk back and get out of the tub, I swing my right leg up and my right pinky toe catches the corner of the wall really fast and it snaps. I break it. And like 10 seconds later, like the guy must've heard it. Cause he came, I think I shrieked and he comes in and I'm laying in his tub holding my toe. And he goes, what happened? And I go, I think I broke my toe. And he didn't know what to say. And I just look at him and I go, please hire me. And he bought the job. So it was good. So,
awesome.
And then like the week before that, I got stung in the face by a bee. And then like the bee's cousin stung me in the other cheek. And that homeowner came walking around the corner and my face was all swollen. And I was like, yeah, I just got stung by a bee. Can you hire me?
Did you get that job?
I got too, that job too. So that's my new sales technique: is just hurt yourself.
That's great.
All right. So looking back to the lazy, stupid kid and growing up on the ranch that you thought you were. Okay, put yourself back in that kid's shoes.
Yeah.
All right. What would he think of the dude that I'm talking to now?
Wow, that's a great question. Probably disappointed in some ways because I'm half bald. I don't know. I'm pretty comfortable in my skin, and I sure wasn't. I think that would be the thing you would think of is this guy's okay. Mm-hmm. This fella made it. Really? That's me? I think I'd be encouraged if I was the 8-year-old looking forward and realizing that this I actually made it because I was scared to death. I just was scared to death growing up.
That's good stuff.
That I would ever be somebody or amount to some or do something or you know six kids and a beautiful life and I think that's what I would do. I would just be relieved that I was going to be okay.
I love it. I love it, man. Well, I know you've had a huge impact on a lot of people, and I guarantee some people listening to this have been moved forward in some way. So I already asked you, or you already brought up which Strongpreneur Promise resonated with you most. It was the third one, which is cool. So
Can I just do one more too?
Sure.
My son is is a one of my both my sons are really ace runners. My daughters are too, and every time they step on a starting line, whether it's a smaller competition or one that is really really important, the last thing after all the counsel and the race planning and the mindset, I always look at them and say, "Go have fun, go have fun." And it, I just, guys, whatever we're doing, whatever we're experiencing, let's experience the joy of it, as hard as it is sometimes, as miserable as it is sometimes. Let's be sure to experience the joy that's in it.
You know, man, that has been a theme. You and the two guests prior to you, two or three guests prior to you, have brought up the fifth promise of "I will have fun." And it's funny because each time they bring it up, I go, you know, it reminds me back when I've been building my businesses and things like that. Is I could be a pretty intense guy and driven and destroy things in my path to get my goals and all this other stuff. And a lot of times I don't just enjoy the ride. And so, I don't know, this is probably like God's way of telling me that I need to lighten up, because all you guys keep saying, have fun. So, but that's good. You got to enjoy the ride. And if you're not having fun, something's got to change.
So here's a question. Okay. For me, stay tuned. I turned 50 in April. There's a whole new set of world records, the 50 to 55 age, 54 age group world records. Coach and I have got some very definite plans, and we are working hard to put ourselves in position to get some of those. I guess the question is, where are you headed, Tom? And if you and your listener, where are you headed in the next 6 months? Mm-hmm. Have you got some things that have never been done that you've set on your agenda? Some stuff that kind of scares you a little bit because they're so hard. And if you don't, I would suggest go look at something that's never been done, that maybe you've never done, that you've wanted to do. What is your world record you're shooting for?
Oh, man. So my last question for you was, imagine that you're going to, in 5 minutes, you're going on the stage and you only have 5 minutes to talk to a group of entrepreneurs. What would your talking points be? And I get the sense that you just gave us that.
I did. Yeah. go live a little frightened, because your goals, your dreams are reachable, but that's going to be a lot of work, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to create it's going to require a lot of growth, and it scares me just a bit because it's that hard.
Well, we look forward to seeing what you do, man. So for people who are listening that want to get in touch with you, how do you want them to do it? Where do you want them to go?
BradBartonSpeaks.com is a great place to start. I've written a book called Beyond Illusions that I'm really proud of. People are loving this book. It's sold, you know, tens of thousands of copies and been translated in a bunch of different languages. And I'm writing a new book called Back on Track. And it's about living on the learning curve, that horrible, awful, terrible, amazing, incredible, beautiful place to be.
Oh, Brad, I love it, man. That's good stuff. So I'll make sure to put, can they get that on Amazon? The Beyond Illusions?
I think so. Well, I love sending out signed copies. So call my office. Just get on my website and make a phone call. I'll send them a signed copy.
Sweet.
So BradBartonSpeaks.com.
Great. And I'll put links to all your other social media stuff in the show notes as well, if people want to reach out. Brad, I really appreciate you hanging out with me today. Sure. Even more so, I appreciate the friendship we've been able to build in the last year, and I look forward to taking that deeper, man.
Yeah, and having some more fun down in Mexico.
That's right.
January,
end of January. That'll be fun. It'll be good to see you again and hang out. So with that, man, I appreciate your time, and we'll see you next time, man.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Hey, thanks for checking out this episode of the Strongpreneur Podcast with Brad Barton. Hey, take his advice and go do something. Take action. If you're afraid of something, go run into the punch. Make something happen. Don't just sit around and let your defaults sidetrack you and take you down. Change your defaults. Change your mindset. Do what needs to be done and go do something that has never been done before, because you never know what's around that corner for you. So, and along those lines, if you've never, ever gone to the Strongpreneur Nation website and taken the Strongpreneur Pledge, head over there, take the pledge, join our private Facebook mastermind group where you can get a lot of help to move your business and your life forward in a stronger way. And with that, Travis, bring the guitars in. We'll see you guys next time. Hey, Strongpreneur Nation, if you like this episode of the Strongpreneur Nation podcast and you want to get more stuff to help you build a stronger life and a stronger business, to deal with the head trash, get back your time, build a kick butt brand, get more crap done, then I encourage you to join the Strongpreneur Nation Mastermind Group. It's a private, closed group on Facebook that I would love to have you be a part of, where we can talk about anything and everything to help you get stronger in what you're doing in your business. So head over to Facebook, type in the Strongpreneur Nation Mastermind Group, and request access, and we'll let you in after we teach you the secret handshake. All right, we look forward to seeing you there. Thanks.